Welcome for this late, heavy session after heavy days. So that's the problem. Well, of course, it's very hard to decide what kind of pieces one should look at in a situation like this. There are, millions of possibilities, of course, especially if you are an explorer, like I am, and I never content myself of, having found something which works, also aesthetically, and then, stay forever. Sometimes it's the case for some composers, but it would be very... I mean, there is so much to understand, and I was sure that the more I was going on, the more I would understand about music, but it's actually not happening like that, which is fine. I mean, it's very nice. And so I was thinking a little bit, I was pondering, and there's been a lot of talks about a few topics in these days, here, and not only here, of course. And one of these, which is recurring all the time, is noise. This kind of totem, which is coming back all the time, and we had also a lot of talks among the different musicians, and both from the ensembles and let's say performers and composers, and. This is, as I said many other times, is a kind of a recurring problem of this amount of gestures, which is a word that I have some difficulties to accept, gesture, because it always sounds like it is a kind of envelope of something which is empty inside. So gesture is something that you take already made, like a tuna can, and you place it somewhere. So there is this problem of something which in a way is not only mannerism, no, because you take it from somewhere else, but it's a kind of dead object, it's a kind of dead element. Why? Because it's taken as it is, and it's not in a way contextualized or even generated by a structure. So it's not the consequence of a certain principle, a certain organism which is generating it, but sometimes it's taken as a statement, even for granted. And then sometimes, of course, we can hear that there are problems in connecting these objects and the real music. So sometimes you hear pieces that that take a while until finally the composer, allows himself to be himself, or at least he was aiming to that thing and finally it's coming out, but it takes quite, it's like paying a tax, paying a duty, a tax, before you can actually do what you want. And you have to start from the noise and doing some certain amount of punishment, and then you can get to what you want. It would be more interesting to consider, this is my opinion, to consider the musical matter as an endless combination of forces. So every single phenomenon, musical phenomenon that we listen to, is actually the unique combination of weights, of pure energies. And it's endless. So what we need to know is either consider that we can work with these energies, or we can't. And this is the first statement we have to make clear. Because there has been a kind of... negative culture, negative thinking, which is a consequence of Adorno's philosophy, but not only, which has led to conceptual art, if you want, and thanks to the big impact of John Cage in the late 50s in Darmstadt, this was a sort of declaration of death of the work of art in Western culture. And after that, of course, he made a shock at the time with a bunch of people that we know, the old guys there. And they were forced to find solutions which were first the opera aperta, the open form. So, you know, Klavierstück, what was it, 10, I think, whatever. And the third sonata, Boulez, they were trying, and then, of course, the momente form, and then all these kind of things. And then the alia boxes, and then Kagel with the conceptual thing, and then the improvisation, and blah, blah. And it became a little bit like visual art, conceptual art, which was implying a sort of philosophy, which said it's impossible to build an architecture which is actually making sense, and it goes from here to here, and it's impossible to narrate a story. As Adorno used to say, after Auschwitz, it's not possible to write poems anymore, after this horrible thing, because there is kind of, you know, an unveiling of this dark side of human consciousness, conscience. And personally, I would say that we need 10 times as much, more poetry, but we can discuss about that, you know. But this generated this kind of negative thinking, in which was actually inhibited the possibility of expression of any kind. And for good reasons, at the beginning, because these guys, they were trying to clean up the table after a war, you have to remember, that made 60 million casualties. I mean, 60 million people died in the Second World War. And of course, you can imagine how was Europe in 1945, 46, 47. It was, you know, a bunch of debris. It was absolutely, I guess, I was not there, of course. But so they needed to find some other solutions to build a musical structure, which was not relying on the cliché, on the well-known statements of the previous music, which was too much connected to what was happened before. So they decided to avoid to take responsibilities. They decided to give these responsibilities to the numbers. So that's what we call, you know, serialism, technical serial techniques, and so on. So many years has passed by, and this idea that is possible or not to make sense, to produce sense and meaning, is in the background, is the one of the main fundamentals which are still discussed. So in a music which is extremely complex and extremely difficult and extremely wants to be or claims to be radical, the idea of artwork doesn't exist, is refused. So you have, in a way, someone like Sciarrino, who is using the ghosts of Western music. So just echoes, that's what he says, huh? That's not me. Lachiman, who was using, because he doesn't use it anymore, is trying to use notes, and he told me many times that, oh, now it's very easy to write a piece with noises. I'm trying to use notes, and it's very difficult. Literally, I mean, just a few months ago. And in his case, he was using, again, leftovers. So the pitches are completely exhausted. This resource doesn't exist anymore. So what shall we do? We try to use what's left, which is noises. On the other hand, we have someone else like Fernehau, who decides to create a kind of tabula rasa, or at least he tries. Yeah, that's what he says. Trying to avoid any possible connection with what I call semantic pressure, which means the power of evocation of history. So he's trying to kill every reference to something which is already known, which is obviously impossible, because everything we do means something, even if we don't want. That's the problem. And so his music sounds very much like free jazz, in a way, for instance. And so he's undergoing this destiny, even if he doesn't want it also. Anyway, all these attitudes, in a way, and there are some countries in which these attitudes are more present, they are against, in a way, the possibility of making sense with an artwork. So the idea of work itself, of artwork itself, is put in question, is questionable. And of course, we might say, okay, if you think that it's impossible, why do you compose then? And this is an open problem, you know. So we don't have to fall back into any, that's the statement, in any of the previous cliché of anything. So actually all the logics of perception should be banned in a way. And what's the borderline? There are many things which are physiological, and they belong to the human body in a way. We could try to understand which ones, for instance, symmetry or asymmetry, and the differential sense of time, which means event A and then event B, and so this is putting kind of measuring the time. These kind of things belong to perception. So the first guardrail, the first division, is about making sense or not. And sometimes I think it's not very clear, because this kind of statements, musical statements, instead about not having a formal shape, not having the intention of narrate anything, but rather being against that, using sounds which. With great effort, we don't want to get to be similar to anything else. So they should be like having like a kind of virginity, something like that, a virgin state, which is, as I said, it's pretty difficult to obtain because we are completely saturated of information. So anything we hear, anything we do, it's immediately recalling something else. There are a lot of contradictions, but whenever we consider that we still want to make sense and still want to understand how the music is working and how these pure energies are actually contributing to a final result, so we want to tell a story, whatever it is, whatever it does mean, but there is this intention, then we can start talking about music. But before that, it's more like a philosophical statement, and so we should talk philosophy or something else. That's conceptual art. It's a big topic, of course. So I give for granted, in a way, that we are talking among musicians, and that we are all interested in something which is happening. Which, whether it's possible or not, I don't know if it's philosophy or not. I try to think musically, and which means that we have these two main. Aspect, and this semantic aspect does exist. It's not something that you can ignore. But on the other hand, we have a kind of very phenomenological approach to the music matter, which is more. It's closer to a natural phenomenon than or an organic phenomenon than to philosophy. And in this sense, noise is only one of the possible states of musical matter. And what I find very, very interesting is to fine-tune and get deeper into our own analytical possibilities, analytical tools, because this allow us to formalize, which means describe, in a discrete way, which means manipulable way, a musical phenomenon, a perceptive phenomenon. In this case, and this is related to pure energies management. On the other hand, we have this semantic pressure, which is, if you want, this power of evocation. We have to keep in consideration these two aspects. And probably every piece of music is a kind of search for a balance between these two aspects. I think the semantic pressure should be taken in consideration since the beginning as one of the parameters, in a way. So you know that if you will be using a certain interval or a certain even noise or a certain rhythm, it will immediately trigger a certain amount of models in your hard disk here, which is a scanning to find the right model to confront what it's experiencing in that real-time situation and what's in it's archived in the memory. On the other hand, we have these pure energies, and this is the real work of the composer, is to analyze what's happening. In a musical phenomenon, all the parameters are at work. What we should do is to break the unity of this object, like an atom, doing a sort of atomic exploration, and see how this object is behaving in time, space, and all the parameters, which implies a very good eye and very refined analytical tools, even before starting to synthesize, in the sense to compose the piece, or even making structures for the piece. So first analysis and then resynthesis of this thinking. We have a very complex reality around, so we need very fine-tuned tools to understand what's happening. It's much more complex than at Mozart time. We have all this overlapping of centuries and different continents of music, you know, like 15th century of music and 5 continents all at the same time. And it's not comparable to the 18th century or even before, when you know, you had only one culture and you had to travel for weeks to get a symphony with a live orchestra, you know, on a car with horses, something. And the perception was in a way much slower, but instead the sense of new things was much faster, because something which was written 6 months before was considered old. And now, you know, we have all this overlapping. So there's an immense amount of information. So an extra reason to be sharp and to develop your own tools to find a way. A big problem in this gray mass of experiences that we are bombed from is the very difficult the difficulty of discerning qualities. What is a quality? If you have a great mass of events like a stochastic mass, how can you single out some things which are more important than others? And this is a huge relating also to what we were talking about yesterday, about the fact that, you know, we have to get this little telematic suitcase that we should bring in the next millennium, and we are the last one probably who can actually decide what we should fit in this little suitcase. So, you know, that's why we have to really sharpen our eyes and our view and see what's happening. And we can start from what we use daily, which is, you know, notes and rhythms and so I say this because I go back to the noise. The noise is just one state of the matter. If we consider that the parameters are like living organism, they change all the time in time, and the different degree or combination or amount of the different parameter creates the face of an object. If I have more nose and little eyes and a big mouth, which means, I don't know, a very, very unstable or articulated construction of rhythms, and then I have very little reduction of the space, vertical events, then I will have a certain balance. If I have very stable rhythm and a lot of very complex vertical or either free, let's say free frequential, like pitches or noises, whatever you want, but with a high level of instability, then the phase will be completely different. And then I know that if I want to transform this object into something else, for instance, the previous one, I will have to apply a lot of energies on the frequency aspect, and probably reduce the rhythmic, increase the rhythmic the aspect. This is part of, it should be part of our daily experience. Just to, you know, try to be as clear as possible about what we're talking about. A piece can be the transformation from one situation to another. So one balance of the parameters, which is object one or situation one to situation two. It doesn't necessarily have to be a development. It can be circular. It can come back and so on. In other situations, you don't want, like in African polyrhythm, for instance, you don't want to change the identity of the object. That's what they do, and what Stravinsky doing is doing in the Rite of Spring, and many other cultures also. And we were doing before the Baroque era, like in the motet, isorhythmic motet. In this case, we had structure which was just turning on itself, and the identity of the object was not changing, actually. You had, like in African polyrhythm, you have layers of objects, which actually are, each layer is different, but within the same layer, the pattern is not changing. So it's repeating itself, like a loop. Then we have a second loop, which has a different character, a different identity. And so the only way to build a form, like in the Rite of Spring, which is using the same mentality, is accumulation or subtraction. There's no other possibility. So you just make this thing looping, turning, rolling, going, then you accumulate, okay, one layer, then another layer, then another layer, then another object, which repeat themselves. So the object, the identity of the object is not changing. And then, as it happens in the Rite of Spring, this, the space and the time is saturated, and he has to stop. There's nothing else that you can add. So, rah, 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 stops. And then it starts. And since, of course, he's a great musician, he can start again with a fantastic new idea, and then piling up again. With African culture, you don't even need to start again because there is no sense of time as we have it. There's no ending. It's just a portion of infinite that is taken, and it's functional to something which is happening in the community. So it can be a marriage, it can be the hunt, it can be the rain. It has a social function. So people get together, sometimes with incredible results, like 25-part polyphony, which is made by 25 different families, and each one is actually preserving one single pattern of this polyphony. Only in special occasions during the year they get together, and you have this fantastic fresco of polyphonic lines that just appears. And, I mean, this is a social function. Everybody gets together, and they make, you know, a work of art, which is their community. That's the work of art. It doesn't exist, the work of art. It exists a community which establishes its own rules. In our culture, which is actually not our culture forever, but only from this classical style, there are some wonderful books about the birth of this classical style, which is not something which popped up like a mushroom one day, but it took at least two or three centuries to find the right shape. And Charles Rosen, for instance, his best book, which I suggest strongly, is the Sonata Form. Is one of the greatest books about this. And then, if you have time, you can understand how it worked and how it was generated. This thing, which has a high level of control on the parameter, on the musical parameters, that's why we say it's the perfection of Mozart, this balance between all the... It's because there is an incredible control on all the parameters. You could, with a very modern gaze, or an analytical tool, you could analyze Mozart as a piece of music without any particularly tonal connotation, as a phenomenon, you know, almost an organic phenomenon. And you would discover that all these parameters are extremely balanced. There is an ascension of pitches, and then a stepping down like this, and of course the tonal harmony is one of the parameters in this case because it's part of the system. So you will need to know how these tensions work in time. So what we call the harmonic rhythm, you have these tensions and attractions and relief between different families, which are only three, as you know. We can explain all tonal music with three chords or three families. All this together proved that it was possible to develop the musical element. So what they were doing, starting from the classical period, was to break this atom, and actually it's happening between the first and second theme in a sonata form and in the development, where you see that these elements actually, they mutate, they morph into something else. And this is extremely interesting. It would be really worth to do a study, even an essay about that. See how they just take all the bridges between first and second theme, for instance, or developments, and see how carefully they do it. And it's a very modern thing, so it's not something that we do only now. It's been always done by great musicians, at least in this style, which is this morphing of the identity of the objects. I say all this again because if we have this deep analytical regard, look, vision, capacity, we can see that noise, of course noise, there are many, many noises, it's not one noise, and we can also start discerning which noise is what. It's not only one noise. So what is the main feature that makes us talk in terms of noise or not noise? I would say the degree of instability is very important. So you get something noisy when the majority of parameters actually is not stable. And that can happen in thousands of fashions, of course. There are situations in which you have only some parameters acting on a mass, on a gray mass. We did an example, if you have a completely white noise, the first element of handling, for instance, the timing of this noise, or how do you get from a figure from a completely noisy background. There are some elements that you have to underline, and every time is a matter of filtering. So if you have complete white noise, then you should start, for instance, which is the first perception. I was asking someone, what is the first perception of time we have in life? The most basic one is on-off, so night and day. This is really, you know, the most simple that you can get. So if you have a noise, how can you start working on that? Just on and off. So shh. And the second step will be an envelope. So ADSR. At the same time, it's very important, these things, you know, because it's really thinking musically. And then you say, okay, but if I want to make a figure stick out from a very dark background, like, you know, this one of these walls, for instance, which is extremely unstable, bad light, very dark. What you have to filter out. What does it mean to filter? It means to reduce the amount of information. But on which level? Okay, now the game starts, you know? You start posing yourself all these questions and you have to find an answer. So, for instance, reduction and repetition. If you want something to stick out, you have to reduce the parameters. So, as I said, let's on off or an envelope, and then you have to choose a range, then a dynamic, and so on and so on and so on. And even only maintaining the noise aspect, but only acting on the noise, making an action on something which is there, you start already filtering. And then if you filter instead with a frequency filter, then you will have formants appearing, and which is also connected to range and dBs, of course, and so on. So this explains why we have so many different noises. And I was thinking that in order to, because what we heard, not only in your pieces, but in general, is that sometimes these objects, these noisy objects, are completely disconnected from the rest. So I was making jokes the other day saying, every piece has to start with a horn blowing air and something. But this is a long time happening. So when you ask, okay, what's the relation between this and this? Maybe there is a note or a kind of melody after, or a harmony or a chord or a scale. And sometimes the transition is it is actually the most difficult moment, you know, the transition between noise and something which is not a noise. And so this is where you really prove what you can do. You know? Because if you actually control, if you rule the noise as an N state of the matter, then you can contextualize this object in a bigger picture. And then you can find its own place, which can come from something, for instance, the reduction of certain, or the solidification of certain parameters or whatever, or the atomization of other parameters. And then it's not just this, but it's here, and it's coming from something, and it's going to many different directions. It's up to you to decide which one is the one you want to take. But it becomes a living thing. It's not just a gesture. This word, which I don't know what does it mean, really. I should have some explanations about that. I have to ask, because I'm too stupid, maybe. But it's really, I feel it's something, you know, that you borrow from something else and it's there, you know, like a postcard. And of course you can do it. It becomes a kind of postmodern thinking, you know, just take this and then that and this, you know, and you make a kind of collage or patchwork and then you have fun with it. But we have already a lot of DJs, progressive DJs, who do that. You know, they remix stuff, they use objects, found objects, objet trouvé. It's not forbidden, it's not illegal. I mean, you can do that. Everybody does that, actually. It's very easy to do that. It's a kind of self-defense, you know, because all these people, they don't have the cultural means that we have or we are supposed to have. So they just, but they have a strong talent and a strong, many, some of them. They have a strong, you know, desire, necessity to do something. They cannot face this huge wall of culture. So they just, you know, stick their hands into this matter. They take something out, you know, and they try to do something. So it's, you know, fragments of other pieces, other people, music, or historical things, and vinyl, and this and that, and ethnic, and they, you know, they mix it. They use vinyl, they use DJ set, whatever. It's a kind of self-defense, you know. I don't have to. We are supposed to have these tools to you know, to understand what's happening and to rebuild something, which makes sense, you know, in architecture, if we are still able. So all these analytical tools have to be used in this way, I think. So there are many, many different possibilities to use this. If we talk about instability, which is one of the possible keys to manage and interpret this, then we don't have, not only in the noise domain, but in thinking, in the logic domain, we have many sorts of instability. The instability can be a high level of fragmentation, of atomization of the musical thinking, which is, for instance, very close to a kind of stochastic way of composing, which means, high complexity and small fragments, but with a high level of complexity. It can be a polyphony intended as instability, as polyphony of parameters, which means a very dense activity on different levels of the musical object, of the musical thinking, like in a way partially is Ferneyhough music. And this is in fact quite connected to the serial thinking. So polyphony of parameters is, in a way, it's a form of serialization of all the parameters. But think that, like, if you have many lines and each line is actually controlling one of the parameters or an aspect of the parameters, then you have a polyphony of parameters, which is extremely unstable. You know, everything is changing. In other words, the degree of variation in terms of timing and spacing and all the other parameters is very high. The degree of variability and different informations in a given time is very high. Then you can have another form of instability is a density of aggregates. What does it mean? It means that you have a pole, a center, and then you have a certain degree of noise, which is always around, which is generated around the pole. And this is something that you, for instance, if you have a note and each note or a noise or whatever you want, and every time there is a given like a mass of dirt in a way that it's generated, that's exploding around this, this pole. Then you have an aggregate. You can even have what would sound like a chord, but it's not a chord, it's an aggregate. And this is something that you can find, for instance, in Varese. Now, if you analyze his orchestration, you will never find a note which is alone, but it's always surrounded by the micro or less micro cluster, which is noise. But also in Xenakis, you have this, which is a cluster, as we said with someone, diachronic noise. Now, if you think, glisse is a cluster in time. And as I said to someone, if you try to analyze a note from a glissé, what you will get is not a pitch, but try with AudioSculpt. And you will see that you only get noise, because there is no fundamental, and the computer can't find any sort of... It's very interesting, it's very intriguing. And then you understand, you realize that it's, you know... noise in time, or a cluster in time. Cluster, by definition, as you try to analyze, you know, a hit of a percussion, is noise. Then, if it's chromatic, is what we use in a piano, then we call it a cluster, but it can be a density of noise as well. Then, of course, you have the instability of a literal noise, which is what? Yes, instability, but what is its feature? Just to give a brief description, as I've done with the other possibility of instability, which of course are endless as well. Well, I would say the noise is more about aperiodicity. So it's something that it doesn't reach a state of a curve, of a wave, and it's broken before. So it does have a very incoherent behavior. So it's more like consonants and vowels in a way. And then, of course, you have an instability as a different hierarchy of activity in a spectrum, which is a little bit the saturation idea, and it's also connected to the space between the different intervals, which is, and the speed, which is increasing when you go to the top, and this is kind of a spectral instability. Which by turn it was too connected with the dominant nine, and so they had to find inharmonic spectra to create a kind of dialectic thing, but it was not enough. But anyway, and then you have the electric noise, which is what we know through guitar rigs or effects and this kind of rock stuff. And then there is a last one, which is even more intriguing, which is when you welcome something which is like a text, which is not belonging to the sphere that we're, you know, the semantic or the linguistic sphere that we're using. So in a way, when you use a text, you're also using a kind of stranger, a kind of foreign element, which is, you know, invading your space. And it's a kind of noise. It's a high level of instability, you know. And what do you do when you have a text? You have a completely, you know, you have a great étrangement, estrangement, and you have to find, a relation, which can be denying completely this the other world, which is the verbal comprehension, you know, the semantics, or use it, and how. And this is very interesting because it's not reductible or reducible. How you say reducible? Reducible to the same semantic niche where we decide what is signal and what is noise. The signal to noise ratio is also within one discipline, like music, is a niche, if you want. If you invite someone else in this context, like a text or a visual part, or a dance, or images, or lighting, and so on, you have to recontextualize the whole thing. Now, let's see. I have a few examples, just because just to you know, to show that, to show you that this thing is actually, where shall we start? Something here that has taken my time for a long time. Where is it here? This is noise also. In our case, of course. For them, it's not. It's fun.
Guideline, but each of this center is actually generating its own version of the same. So in a way, there is a multiplication, a fragmentation, and each one of these is actually projecting the same guideline, which is more than a line. It's more than a line. And each one is projecting, and then on its turn, this one is projecting its own, and then every one of these is projecting its own in a kind of microscopic multiplication, which brings at the end to a sort of very high activity, like a rain. So many, many small fragments, and it's like constellations which explode in different directions. And of course, you can drive this machine and try to, as you heard, sometimes stick on a specter, or some other times on a little interval, on other times as the end, the very end. All these things that you give a shape in terms of timing, and it became all these massive events. They find a new filtering, as I said before, which is this kind of movement. And this is a gesture in the sense that it's a vector. So you have a clear vector, and you're just driving all this incandescent, this burning matter in one direction. And this was this glisse we had, going down. So you drive this machine in one direction. Another example could be this one. Let's see. In this case, is a polyphony of parameters.
So it's a very complex writing. The piece before was the it's called Etimon. It will be played the last day here, and this recording was Ensemble Intercontemporain with Reir Kam and Barbara Hannigan and Susanna Melchi. This one is Arditi with Ask Ensemble, and as you see here, the instability is in all the parameters, and this high level of activity. We could say that it's quite close to Fernehau way of thinking, with one big difference, that I accept the challenge of semantics, and so I have fun in challenging the borders of something which is almost understandable, and using this thing as a power means, and not as a kind of illegal. It's not a law. Let's see. Something about these aggregates could be. This is this Südwest von Baden-Baden with Jean-Guyen Queyrat, the cellist, and it's called Rest. It's a little fragment. Let's see. This is what I call the hell of fundamentals. So the piece is made in a way that there's a kind of rondo, and there's a high partial, which is coming back. It's a high G, very high G4, and it's coming back. And every time there is a different way to go there, to reach it, starting from this hell of the raw matter, if you want. And here is like Varese, in a sense that you have these aggregates. There is no clean aspect of it, but it's always bringing on its shoulder, in a way, the burden of this hell. You know. Then you have the literal noise, which is more close to Lachenmann, and this piece was actually an homage to Lachenmann, and it's dedicated to Helmut. And but I didn't really understand that it was actually a little bit taking him for a ride, because I was kind of mocking, teasing him a little bit, because it's called end of a unexpected end of formula, and the formula is exactly something which he has invented, but it's become a kind of, you know. And so we have here, it's played by Musikfabrik. And it's interesting for me, the idea that always, which is behind this idea of manipulating pure energies, is the idea of compensation, which means if you have something which is extremely complex on one hand, then you have to compensate with a relatively simpler organization on other levels, which is the same thing you need to do, or you want to do when you are doing theater, for instance, music theater or théâtre musical, or anything which implies the use of some other disciplines. You have to, in a way, give in a little bit of the complexity of your own and each other discipline in order to fecundate. Otherwise, there's no space. This was one of the big problems in Berio's theater, for instance, which he pretended to put on stage the same complexity of the music. And of course, it didn't work because it was too complex. It was just, you know, overwhelming, and then it was a mess in the end. So in this case, we have a very complex object, but with a very simple organization. Sorry. Oh man, no, sorry. And of course, silence and noise, also in this case, silence is very important. It's like noise because it's an echo chamber for the noise itself. So it's resonating with the noise. We don't have a real silence. So, as I said, you have a complex object with a quite simple organization, which is broken by this kind of loop, which are a kind of anticipation of what will happen after, which is periodic waves, basically, notes. But what happens is that now you see this is a cello solo. This object is following, complex object, is following a single line, in fact. So they're all playing like a monodic line. You know? So it's very simple. But what happens is that after the first cycle, the orchestra breaks in two. Sorry. The orchestra breaks in two parts, and one is following the same proportions in terms of numbers, but with a slightly different unit of rhythmic unit of multiplication. Say something like the one was 16 notes, and this second one, which is splitting from the first one, is 16 notes of a quintuplet. So they get out of phase, and so you have two lines created. And then in the second, the third cycle, you will have a split of the third part of the orchestra, which will start following another rhythmic value. So you have a polymetric polyphony, which is, you know, establishing until the moment in which this formula is just exploding for saturation. Then we can have another example about sort of spectral saturation, which is what I like to do is to make these ideas, this state of the musical material alive, so living organisms and not objects, not gestures. So also a spectre can be contextualized in a kind of transformation journey, and that's what's happening later in the same piece. So I was wondering how, I was trying to understand how it's working, a spectre in the high components, and I was actually reaching this state of the matter through a kind of keyhole, which was coming from, okay, we can see. So now, in a way, it's filtered all the low, mid, and low part, and you're left with the high formants. And now we get to the next kind of noise, which is an electric noise. And the cello is passed through a guitar rig more and more, as you may hear. Okay, we jump a little bit. And this is really twisted, warp, distorted sound. The very end. Okay, anyway, you got it. And this is not helping this. So as a last example, something more complex, which is this text you have. And it's very important to understand the text. Now, we don't have a lot of time for this, but it's called Herzstück. I don't know if you understand German. But this problem of the text, of the relation with the words, is not very easy to handle. This text is by Heine Müller. Maybe you know this guy. And it's quite strong, as the usual. I can briefly translate it, and it says one. It's like we have two characters. One says, "Can I put my heart at your feet?" And two say, "Well, if it's not making my floor dirty." And one say, "My heart is pure, it's clean." And two says, "Okay, we'll see." Then one, "I cannot take it out." And two, "Do you want some help?" One, "Well, if it's not too bothering you." "No, it's my pleasure. But I cannot take it out either." And one cries. And two says, "I want to make this operation to take it out. Why? Otherwise, I have a Swiss Army knife in my pocket." Okay, let's have a look. Work and not despair. So here we go. But this is a brick. Your heart is a brick. Yes, but it's beating only for you. So, this is a very famous text. But as you see, it's very hard to... what do you do with this text? And I had this commission from the Neue Kassolisten, so I decided that I could afford something very, very... strange and very experimental. And when you're working with the meaning, then you have a lot of references. And one thing which really struck me was in the past, the examples that we had, like Aventure, Ligeti's, or Aronne, they assume what we don't have now. They assume that the meaning is there still in the words, and it's shared with an audience. So that we have a certain amount of cultural references which are in common, and we still can make sense. And so they were, you know, these people, they were talking a lot about how we can re-put together the meaning of words. And there was something that didn't really sound me exact in this thing to me. And it is the fact that now the words themselves, they have lost their power. I mean, the noise is in the words themselves. The meaning, the lack of meaning is in the word, the words themselves. So there is no safe area that we can rebuild. So there is no pre-verbal situations like it used to be for Berio or Stockhausen, or that you can work in order to reach this common shared moment of understanding, which is common to different people. So we have references, cultural references. So Berio, for instance, in Aronne, he was making short circuits between, I don't know, a Bach chorale and the text of The Capital by Marx, out of context, which is a little bit, and thinking that the audience would understand. So he was relatively optimist, but apparently it was like that. And now it sounds very old, because we don't share. I mean, how can you imagine in a normal audience this kind of references? They're extremely niche-like, you know. It's not something that we can share with a lot of people. So these common values on which you can build, a structure of meaning today, it doesn't exist, basically. Everyone has his own niche of values If you take one word and you try to like truth, how many different interpretations of this word there are? If a priest says it, it's one thing. If your wife says it or husband says it, it's another. If a politician says it, it's another. If Madonna says it, it's another one. And there is no common meaning for things. So there's a high level of instability, actually. So there's no way to start from a pre-verbal situation and building finally the meaning. You know, it's something that it's because there is no meaning. I could say something, but each one of you would interpret that in a different way. So it's very, very, it's impossible to do it as they did at the time, provided it was right. But so I could not, as you might imagine, you know, the first thing you think, okay, I have a text like this. So what would you do? There's a high theatrical component, of course, but is it possible to rebuild this meaning of the text and this dialogue between these two people at the end? Like you start with the first idea that you get, it would be, you know, I start kind of material stuff, of phonetic level, and then step by step I reconstruct the meaning, and then in the end finally you will understand this incredible relationship that there is between these two people. I don't even know which one is the woman, which one is the man, if they are a man and a woman. It could be anybody. And the first performance, Heiner Müller wrote this thing like 1 hour before, and then he gave it to two actors, which did a show of 2 hours repeating this text in all the possible manners. So I was trying to reconstruct the story of this text, and it's actually, if you read it carefully, it's a mine. It's impossible to exhaust, as all the big pieces, all the big authors, from Shakespeare to Dante, and Heiner Müller is not less than that. So is it a sexual intercourse? Is it a sadist intercourse? Is it a political statement? Is it a couple who is kind of making war inside? Is the case of Quartet, for instance, which is another very famous text. It's very hard to say. It can be interpreted in many, many ways. So what do you do when you have to deal with the meaning of a text and you have to write a piece? It's a big, big problem. And even if it's an opera, it's even more. It's even a bigger problem. So can you tell a story? You can tell a story. Are you going to use it only musically and you forget about the text and the meaning of the words? There are many, many possibilities. And so I decided, okay, let's clean up this thing and let's do the opposite, which is I want to start with the meaning of the text. So this problem is solved since the beginning. Of course, in Germany, this is working much better because everybody understands. And especially if you don't know the text, it's really shocking when you hear it. Then you start a little bit smiling because it's almost too much. And so I said, well, if I put the text at the beginning, then I have, in a way, solved the problem, and then I will make a deconstruction after, until I, you know, I exhaust all the possibilities, or a lot of the possibilities, first in terms of meaning, so you will have a certain amount of passages, until you get to a final state in which the text is completely reduced to pure periodic lines, like a Feldman piece. But it's passing through an amount of different states. So at first we have the text as it is, and then there is a superposition of different interpretation, so semantic interpretation of the same text, and you have like couples forming, couples of characters, like in a theater, in an imaginary theater. And then you have you go down to the decoupage, to the fragmentation in terms of phrases, and then you have different relation between these characters, so you don't really understand if these are characters or real persons. So there is the reinvention of functions, narrative functions, so they happen to be in a kind of school, in a classroom. Like, I don't know if you know Tadeusz Kantor, is a great, you don't know anyone? It's a great stage director, Polish stage director, Kantor, and it's a homage to him. Then it's cutting down into words and syllables and then phonemes, and we get to a situation in which it's like beatboxer or you know, kind of pure material like this, which is shaping itself in time and space. And then you get to the periodicity of vowels plus the attacks, and in the end we have this. So in a way it's like cleaning up the table and getting into and seeing if it's possible to refine a meaning, a connection between the word and the sound. Because as you know, the big diatribe is if the words are connected. The sound of the word is connected with the meaning of the words. And this is going back to Plato. So if, you know, pick, tick, click is also connected to the sound and the meaning, and, you know, like large or fat is also, this is, you know. Okay, now the piece is pretty engaging, and it's getting very late, so I may try to jump here and there. But with this noise, I don't know. People laugh because they understand.
Eins. Mein Herz ist rein.
Zwei. Das werden wir ja sehen.
Eins. Ich kriege es nicht heraus.
Zwei. Wollen Sie, dass ich Ihnen helfe?
Eins. Wenn es Ihnen nichts ausmacht.
Zwei. Auch nicht heraus.
step is to create different level of interpretations of the same. So the text is more or less the same. You don't work on the fragmentation of the text in terms of already of phonetic, but you have different interpretations of the same. And so there are couples of different relationships that are generated by this different interpretation. And this is happening a little bit later. Now, we don't have a lot of time, so I'm trying to... And of course, I was also passing through different stages of historical stages of treating the text of the recent past. The function of the text, step by step, they become a function of the structure. So the rhythm that you hear in the back, they are the rhythm of the text, which is now producing musical functions more and more, rather than the meaning. Tenor who is saying the whole text of the whole piece. So here there is a kind of reinvention of the text in another context. It's this kind of school in which there is one professor, a woman, and the other who are like students, very undisciplined. So it's a kind of blocking in a kind of compulsive and surreal. So she's actually asking things, but they don't know what to reply. And she's getting more and more violent, and they get blocked in this kind of compulsive. So the syllables are actually now in a kind of dead end. She gets more and more nervous because they don't care about her at all. They just... It's very theatrical, you have to see it. But... And to a point in which she exhausts the patience. So you see that it was completely melted, this the meaning. If you think at the beginning where you have the spoken words, then step by step the different level of destruction. And actually here it's something that they should practice much more, but it becomes pure noise with rhythm, so it's a beatbox basically. But they something that they are not used to do, and it's not easy. and then step by step, you know, they have exhausted all the possibility of the text, and they get to a certain kind of exhausting of the possibility, and they are left only with the sound matter in a way, and it becomes like a Feldman piece, where the only meaning you can find is you still have the attacks of the consonants in a completely abstract way, but then the vowels in a way they become pure sound. Only at the end they will finally try to find the meaning of a word. Okay, thank you. Any question? Do you have any question?
The relation with the text is obviously something that it's probably many of you have not considered yet, and in fact it's one of the greatest problems in composing, I guess, when you go out from your safe area, you know, and it's in a way easier with dance or with the video, you know, because they have. But with words, it's a long story, and for me, this piece is very important because it's a journey through all the things that we know in a way from the recent history, and. I was really wanting to, longing for a direct contact with the semantic of the spoken word. So that's why I decided to get rid of it in the beginning, and then destroy and burn all the potential of these meanings, and going back into a kind of, you know, cleaning. We have this terrible saturation in our head in which we're not even sure about the meaning of a single word when we're talking, when we are chatting with a friend, you know? And so I felt the need of this deep, deep cleaning and getting to the pure sound matter, like, you know, a consonant and a formant, you know, just a vowel. And then see if there is a mysterious place in the deep somewhere where we can still cook a relation between a noise and the meaning, or a noise and a feeling and expression, which is a little bit the same problem that we have when we compose. Is it still possible? That's why I invite you all to think about these things that I've been saying for 2 hours now.
which is, if you use something, I think it's not so interesting to use, you know, objet trouvé, just gestures or objects or dead things that you put there. But the real challenge is to see if they can be contextualized, they can live somehow. So it's very nice to be influenced by this or that music. This is absolutely normal, and you shouldn't feel at all embarrassed or guilty. You have to put your feet on something, but then it has to be something which is your own. So even if you are using some influences, but it's important that you make them your own, and to know to be able to do this, you have to know the implied potential, as I said, through analysis of your musical face, your figure, your object that you have in your hands, and ask him, why do I like you? And if you can find an answer, then you can also compose the piece, I think. And this analytical part is very, very important and interesting part. It's the one that will give you the fuel for the whole piece, and not exhausting it. It's not very... I just decided to talk about noise in this meeting, in this presentation, only because I see a lot of young composers dealing with this problem. So I was wondering, what shall we do with this? Shall we talk a little bit about that? That's all. But I don't consider noise as a special thing. We are surrounded by noise, actually. And that's why it's even more important to know what is this noise and what we can do with it. So noise is a part... I tell you one story, very nice. I love music in the sense that, even in the traditional sense, for the ones of you who heard my choral piece, that was another challenge on the complete opposite direction. So maybe you are surprised to listen to this music tonight, but this is my work. You know, many years ago I was working in this place, and we had new tools with Max. And with other software, which are now available with these little toys here, but at the time you needed big computers with a lot, very expensive. And at one point there was the first core of what became later AudioSculpt, which was not even, it didn't even have a graphic interface, and we still were using it in different machines and so on. So I was so excited. It was an American guy who was actually building the graphic part of it. He was a redhead young guy in a studio in the research department, and he was coming every day with a new version, saying, try this, what do you think? Okay, let's why don't you put an eraser somewhere, or why don't you do this and this? And so he was coming after 2 days later with some, okay, try this one. And at what point he came with this, he did this eraser that now you have, you know. And I said, well, fantastic. I was writing this piece, and one of these pieces, and I said, now I really want to get to the essence. So I took a clarinet sound, and finally with this powerful technological means, I can find the essence of the sound, and was really looking for this place, mysterious place, where the essence dwells, where you can find these common parts, common components which belong to the sound and the spoken voice, this mysterious area. So I took this poor sound of clarinet and started erasing everything, because of course you had this formants kind of sine waves, so you could see all the formants, and I was sticking in one sound and trying to erase all the dirt around the sound. So I kept, raising, and then finally, I had this very clean sound, and I played it, and it was a sine wave. So what I did was actually erasing the clarinet. So I didn't find any essence at all, but I threw away the identity of the sound. So in a way, given that we have a certain amount of components which are common, like human beings, the dirt is your identity in a way. Now, the noise, you are a noise, because you have the same components, but you are different, and this different is your noise. So if I was erasing the all this instability around the sine wave, I was killing the clarinet, and I was left with the sine wave in the end. So it was really interesting to think that way. What I mean, basically, why I did this kind of list of different... First is this analytical attitude, which is very important. So more than talking about noise, I would like to talk about, you know, instability. So find a way to describe in a musical way, in a technical way, what is one of the possible states of noise, which is a certain amount, a degree high amount of instability in the parameters. And this is something already musical that we can talk technically as musicians, and we should be able to understand each other. And I see that there's a big lack in many, many, many composers I know. I'm not talking about you especially, but many, many, many composers in this vision. I mean, really, not only looking at, but seeing. Now, and this lack is, for a composer, I think it's very, very, very... It's dangerous. I mean, it's not... But the other side is that... being human is being ambiguous. The greatness of Shakespeare and the greatness of the big artworks is to catch this idea of ambiguity, which is embedded in human nature. Why? Because we are big monkeys with, you know, a little bit of a spark in our head, and that's why music is such an interesting metaphor of human condition. Because music is like that. You need a big amount of organization, but on the other hand, it's not enough, and you need intuition. So it's not the process is not exhausted with speculation, rational speculation at all, but not only by instinct, on the other hand. And you always need, it's a dance, a deep dance between these two levels, all the time. And that's why, in a way, noises is also another nice metaphor about, regarding this, related to this ambiguity. And for instance, when you look for an interpreter or a voice, especially a singer, I'm completely fed up of the singers that you get normally, which have, you know, this kind of operatic vibrato and so on. But when you are dealing with big theater, for instance, it's impossible to escape that. And what I'm looking for is especially the body, which we have lost, the body of someone. So the performer in that case is a body. It's not a pure voice, which has been, you know, consecrated by the Western culture and sculpted, carved in a score, in a notational system. You know, so it's the verb, it's the word of the demiurge, of the composer. And then there are some performance with no face, no identity, which will come back along the centuries, and they will give life to this thing. If you take, Miles Davis, or even on a pop level, Prince or Jimi Hendrix, and if you take away the body, you're left with two chords or two notes. So it's 95%. The dirt is 95%. The body is 95% of the... And it's something that we have to... I mean, probably one of the most interesting revolution in the 20th century music, with Varese and then the electronic music and then the concrete music, the music concrete, is the introduction of noise in the sense of the body, of this variable, which is something which is not there forever, but it's something which is like relativity and quantum physics in sciences, no? Well, you know that our problem in the West is the fact that we have lost this connection, and of course this is due to, is one of the consequences of the Enlightenment, if you want, which of course was a great conquer, because before there were other problems, and having a rational expression for many things. Even for progress, which has changed our lives, that has prolonged our age, you know, it was only in the 18th century. It was like in Mali or Sudan. Now it was between 40 and 45 years average expected time of life, you know, and now we have 80, 85. So I mean, there are a lot of things. Which is not by itself, but anyway, it's and we could not live anymore without you know hot water and heating systems and medicines and you know all the comforts and so on. But on the other hand, this rationality, which was also implied in the idea of democracy, made us more and more free, also from a lot of manipulations of some institutions like the church in the old sense, which was actually manipulated, was a tool of power. Now, this let's keep these people quiet, now, and scare them with the number of, which has been working for a long time. But the more there, you see that all religions are in a big crisis, especially in the West. And the strength of the Islamic fundamentalism, for instance, is that they still try, but hopelessly, they try to keep through these severe laws of behavior, to keep this harmony between head and body, between brain and body, so one single thing. But this is typical of the closed society. As soon as you open, even for just a little bit, and there is a Coca-Cola getting through, or a television, or a DVD player, or a computer, it's finished. The closed society is not closed anymore, and then it's the beginning of the end, and that's what's happening, you know. And then you need the armies and weapons to keep the people down, because, you know, everybody has internet in these countries also. So, and in our culture has been even before, and this rationality brings with itself more consciousness, more awareness, but at the same time, a complete loss of spontaneity. So we're not able to be surprised and stupefied by the beauty of the world anymore. You know, we are completely rationalizing everything. And this makes that there is a cut here. And I don't know if you remember this beheading horrible videos some years ago in Iraq. And at one point I had this horrible illumination, and I had like the feeling that it was like a metaphor they were sending us, saying, we still have this integrity and you are divided, so there is no hope for you. You know? So we just make a kind of theatrical mise-en-scene of the complete schizophrenia that you're suffering in the West. So that's our problem. The more you know, the less you become naive in a way, or less surprised by things, and you don't have any more what Coleridge used to call the willing suspension of disbelief. But still, he was saying willing, so it was already a very, very involved way. You know, so you have to suspend the disbelief. So you're basically disbelieving. Then you have to suspend in order to understand poetry, he was saying. You know, in order to understand poetry, you have to disbelieve. But since we are very rational, we're talking about 1798, more or less. So it's a long time. So you have to disbelieve. Because if you are too rational, you're not naive enough, you're not open enough, you're not instinctive enough. So disbelief. But then it's not, you're not able, so you have to suspend the disbelief. So you actually... I'm sorry. You have to believe. So you have to disbelieve, but you need a kind of voluntary act to do that. So you have to suspend your disbelief. But it's not even enough. You have to do a willing. So you know that you're going to suspend the disbelief, and this is us. You know, we are so labyrinthic and so complicated, and it doesn't make any sense to ask to an African guy why. You know, you don't have nothing. Your expected time of living is 45 years. You have no house, no car, no iPhone, no nothing, and you're much more happy than we are. And he doesn't know even, you know. Is that at the moment with the Ulysses syndrome, as I said, we started asking ourselves all these questions. In a way, if you want to analyze the world, you have to be also out. If you want to analyze how nature works, you have to be also outside. If you are inside the process, you can't see what it is because you are part of it. So the beginning of everything is when you're trying to rationalize this thing, and you have to put a step out, you have to make a step out. And but on the other hand, from that moment on, you're not part of it anymore. So it's an active relation. Whereas, for instance, a lot of other cultures, they still have a contemplative. They don't think about why is that, why am I here? But they're just in much more harmonically part of the world. And they're still part of the world. But we are not. So in a way, when I'm trying to make you understand how important is the analytical process, it's just because it's the opposite. It's in a way to reconquer this possibility of being, you know, instinctive in a way, if you know, and not to be manipulated, because this is the biggest problem. We think we are free, but in fact, when you are just pushing buttons and you don't even use your hand to write music anymore or anything, and you say, oh, I do this because I'm very modern, I'm so, you know, so free. You're less free, in a way. And so the real problem now is, for us, is to, you know, get the control of the car back and get the steering wheel back and try to drive the car, not to be driven by this huge car. And we are all driven, 90%. So it's all about filtering, you know, and decide every time, discerning quality and deciding. It's becoming really, really, really a heavy task. So we are like, I hope we can find a solution. I don't want to be, but this is, I mean, we have to be realistic, you know. It doesn't help to be, you know, oh, no, it's not true. We all see what's happening, you know, but we have to develop, you know, forces to understand and to find solutions, instead of saying, oh yes, I'm so intellectual, I'm just doing little noises here and there, a lot of silence, you know. This is very academic, it's very manneristic. I mean, there is no, it's like making, you know, a coquetry, a dance on the abyss, you know, when the world is falling apart and you do a little you know, waltz on the Grand Canyon, you know, like Will I Coyote before. And this is my opinion. You know, there are some niche, some milieu in modern music which is, this is still possible. You can do your little, you know, little speculations because you're still in a safe environment, like a WWF animal. You know, but it's not gonna last. I mean, this is, as I said, in the little telematic suitcase, we have little space. We have to decide now. This is the moment. We have to decide now, here and now, what is really important to keep. So there's no time for, you know, little jokes and games and I think, I don't know, I mean, this is my opinion, maybe because I've listened to too much Miles Davis in my life, but it's very healthy. So thanks a lot.